supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Support for Voices in the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. One in five of us has been touched or will be touched by mental illness. Well, in 2003, the Presidential Commission found that our mental health system was in shambles, and since then, nothing has really happened, except there's been a 20% increase in the request for services. So, given that it is October, mid-October, where do both presidential candidates stand with regard to the provision of services, increasing funding, and diminishing stigma? Later on, we'll hear from surrogates from both the Obama and McCain camps. But right off the top, we're going to be talking here in the studio with Jim Jordan. He is the executive producer, executive director of NAMI, National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of Pennsylvania. It's a grassroots organization whose primary purpose is to provide support and education for families and persons with mental illness. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dan. We appreciate this opportunity.
Our phone number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. We're going to speak with Jim Jordan first, then we're going to speak with someone from the Obama camp and from the McCain camp. So, Jim, let's talk about that 2003 bipartisan commission. It was called the New Freedom Commission. Why did we even need that? What was the state of our mental health system back then?
No one was actually really sure about the state of the mental health system. People knew that there were need for improvements in different areas, and some things were being done correctly, but nobody had a comprehensive overview. In 1999, the Surgeon General had a landmark study that had a major impact on beginning to create a public dialogue on the issue of stigma and on the issue of the prevention of suicide, and then looking specifically at different mental illnesses, and he followed that up with a study of on children, but not much took place, not much action took place. And so to take a look at the system and see what it was providing, the president appointed a bipartisan commission.
And the results were not pretty.
No, but the results were very fair and balanced, and the results said that the system needed to be transformed, that the system needed to be redeveloped and more responsive to the needs of families and consumers.
What does that mean concretely? I assume not much has been done in the ensuing 5 years.
There is so much that needed to be done that was identified. I think you're correct. We would agree that not much has been done throughout the nation to make the corrections that were recommended.
Okay, so we've got the ear today of surrogates from both presidential candidates. What needs to be done, Jim?
Well, one of the things that was done, one of the things that has started to happen, is that the report focused on the fact that with today's technology, recovery is possible, that treatment does work, and that people can recover with their mental illnesses. What we're trying to do here is that we believe that in any discussion about healthcare reform, we want to make sure that mental health is part of that discussion. Mental health, depending on how you which report you look at, is the number two disease entity in the nation, just ahead of all cancer-related diseases, and it follows all cardiovascular diseases. And yet, stigma and other issues tend to keep it out of the discussion, and we want to make sure that both parties take a look and include mental health coverage and mental health care.
Oh, let me invite you to be more aggressive here. Let's say you were in charge. Let's say you had the ear of the next president. What would you, would want more than dialogue. You would want more than just sitting at the table. What should that system look like?
Well, more than just the ear would mean that it would be integrated into any plan. It's absolutely critical that we overcome stigma and that we include treatment for persons with mental illness. No life should be forgotten, and people can live in recovery and live meaningful, productive lives.
So in today's world, though, we can't think of anything without thinking about money and the cost. What would the cost be of having the ideal system here in place?
Well, the way
what's the cost of not having it? You address both.
I would say no one's actually put a firm dollar amount on what a revised or transformed system would cost. What we have to look at is the loss we face when we ignore providing treatment and support for people with mental illnesses. And just as employers are beginning to understand more of the importance and support having insurance for health care, there's an investment that employers can make that allows them to have more productive workers in the workplace if they recognize and provide the treatment which we estimate, which the governmental accounting agency has estimated, would be less than 1% of the total cost.
There's a new term being floated around, not absenteeism, but presenteeism. And those who come to work with depression or bipolar disorder who are there but not working, not being productive, and there's an enormous cost.
Whether they're at work or not at work, without treatment, you're absolutely correct.
NAMI issued a report card pretty recently grading each state in the country. Pennsylvania got a D. New Jersey and Delaware got Cs. Neither one of those grades are going to get us scholarships.
That's correct.
So what are these grades based on, and why does services vary so much state to state?
Well, the system is fragmented, and that comes out in the report. What NAMI attempted to do, and I think they did a pretty darn good job of it, was to take a look at services being provided. They set criteria. They involved families and consumers. They surveyed the states, and they had specific questions as it relates to access to services and different programs that were being operated. They found some very creative things that were going on in many of the states, but they found many problems. Now, this wasn't intended as a study to point a finger and make anybody look bad, because the systems are put together over time. It was an attempt to identify problems and help focus attention so that states could begin to work on issues that we think are critical to having a model mental health system.
Why a D in Pennsylvania, and what do we need to do to bring it up to a B or an A?
Pennsylvania received a D because I think primarily for two reasons. Number one, there's no statewide comprehensive written plan as it relates to the closing of state institutions. In addition, and equally if not even more important, access to information on their website we had the worst system in the country. On the positive side, we were ranked very highly as it relates to funds that are going into mental health services. We're very high as it relates to the reduction and elimination of the use of seclusion and restraints. What you'll see as a result of that study is that in the study that's being done now, the follow-up study, major improvements have been made in Pennsylvania. Mm. And I don't expect Pennsylvania to be at a D level this time.
Before we take our break and talk to the surrogates, I want to talk briefly about the Mental Health Parity Bill. At long last, it has been passed after decades of struggling with it. It's been signed into law. It kind of got snuck in with this bailout or recovery bill or whatever you want to call it. Tell us what the legislation does, and just as important, what it does not do.
Well, what you saw there was in the process, 20 years or more of a struggle to bring about a mental health parity act. People of goodwill attached that to the economic recovery package so that it wouldn't get lost. That meant there was a commitment on both parties to see that this bill was actually passed. And so that's a first major step, which will provide relief for families and consumers who have insurance, so that the insurance, there's an outline of what the insurance will provide. And there are some drawbacks. For example, if you don't provide the service, then you don't have to. It doesn't mandate providing service. But as I mentioned earlier, as employers begin to see the benefit of having healthy, both physically and mentally, workers and see the productivity go up, I think that's going to have an impact, a positive impact.
Like I said, we're going to take a short break. We're going to come back and speak with Kareem Dale from the Obama campaign. He's the National Disability Vote Director for Obama for America. And after we speak with Kareem Dale, we'll speak with Renea Moore. She's Deputy Chairman of the Pennsylvania Republican State Party. So we'll be speaking with both of them. You're going to be staying with us, Jim, and you'll be chiming in with follow-up questions. And at the end of the show, you and I are going to talk about what we've heard and what it means. Our phone number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. We'll be back with representatives from Obama and McCain in just 60 seconds. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Kimberton Waldorf School, a supporter of WHYY, will host an open house on Saturday, October 18th at 9 a.m. Attendees will view hands-on activities, meet faculty and students, and take a campus tour. Located in Chester County on over 480 acres, Kimberton Waldorf School offers an experiential approach to learning that integrates academics and the arts for children preschool through 12th grade. Details online at kimberton.org. Kimberton Waldorf School open house on Saturday, October 18th.
The next president will inherit a troubled economy.
We've had policies that have shredded consumer protections.
We are never going to let these kinds of abuses go uncorrected.
Tune in as John McCain and Barack Obama debate the woes of Wall Street. I'm Linda Wertheimer. Join me on October 15th for special coverage of the 2008 presidential debates from NPR News.
Wednesday night at 9 on 91 FM and WHYY.org.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're here with Jim Jordan, who's executive director of the National Alliance of Mentally Ill. But I'm also going to be speaking with Kareem Dale. He's the National Disability Vote Director for Obama for America. Kareem, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Dan. Good to be with you, and good to be with you as well, Jim.
Thank you.
The current Mental Health Parity Act that just got passed, we were just speaking with Jim Jordan, I don't know if you heard, it does not require health insurance plans to cover mental health. It only requires parity for those policies that already cover mental health. And one of my concerns as a psychologist is I'm afraid that that's going to give room for insurance companies to drop their mental health coverage so they don't have to provide parity, and it's still going to leave a lot of people outside without coverage. Is Senator Obama planning on doing anything to require all health insurance to cover mental health?
That's a good question, Dan. Let me start by saying, of course, Senator Obama is a full supporter of mental health parity for all aspects of coverage. And he has demonstrated that in Illinois. He passed the mental health parity bill in Illinois, and he supported mental health parity, the Paul Wellstone Act, from the beginning. So he's certainly a supporter. And I think What Senator Obama is all about is providing real solutions and real answers for everyday Americans' problems, and that includes mental health disabilities. And so one of the things that he's going to do is to pass universal health care. And his universal health care bill is going to require full and equal coverage for mental health conditions, as well as medical or surgical conditions, so that persons with mental health disabilities will receive full coverage, because he's a full supporter of mental health parity.
In one of his position papers, the senator said he plans to strengthen the Americans with Disability Act, and as we all know, this act has been severely restricted by recent Supreme Court decisions. Tell us in what ways he's going to strengthen the act, and how those with mental illness are going to benefit.
Well, you know, as you know, Dan, the ADA Amendments Act was just passed in Congress, and the president signed it a couple of weeks ago, and Senator Obama, of course, was an original co-sponsor of that. One of the key things that needs to be done for the ADA is that we have judges that understand what it means to be an American with a disability and a person with a mental health condition, so that those judges, when rendering decisions, can go by and stay within the original intent of the ADA and now the ADA Amendments Act. That was the reason that the ADA Amendments Act had to be passed, because judges narrowed it and didn't include certain medical conditions or mental health conditions in what it means to be a person with a disability. And so now we have the ADA Amendments Act. Senator Obama, on the one hand, has pledged to appoint judges who will go with what the original intent of the ADA and now the ADA Amendments Act is. Senator McCain, on the other hand, has said he's going to appoint justices such as Justice Rehnquist and Scalia, who are the individuals who are responsible for narrowing the original intent of the ADA. And so when people think about how they're going to look at this presidential election, they need to look at the judges that are going to be appointed. And Senator McCain simply is going to appoint judges that are really not going to honor the original intent of the ADA. And that's Kareem, going to help all Americans with disabilities.
Kareem, Senator Obama also talks about ending discrimination and promoting equality of opportunity. Discrimination is about stigma, and stigma is really hard to legislate away. You just can't do it. Any thoughts about his plans or proposals to deal with stigma?
I think the way you do that, Dan, is that you lead by example. You demonstrate that discrimination and the stigma of Americans with disabilities, that's not appropriate, and that's not right, it's not fair, and it's not equal. I'm a person with a disability, I'm blind, and I've experienced discrimination in corporate America a lot throughout my career. What Senator Obama is going to do, number one, is say that, for example, with employment, the federal government is the largest employer, and he's going to say reinstate the executive order issued by President Clinton when he left office that Bush has done nothing with, to hire 100,000 persons with disabilities. He's going to have a commission to investigate best practices for employment. And so therefore, he's going to set the example and say, look, corporate America, the federal government is leading the way in hiring persons with disabilities. The stigma that individuals with disabilities and mental health conditions don't want to work in can't work is wrong, and we're doing it, and you need to get on the bandwagon and do it. Again, Dan, this is an example of real solutions for everyday Americans, and I would encourage people to check to see what has Senator McCain posed for employment and stigma for people with disabilities, and I think they'll find that Senator Obama's plans are far better for our community.
Kareem, one of the versions of the economic stimulus package had almost $20 billion in funding for states to make up for expected shortfalls in Medicaid, $1.2 billion in funding for medical research for National Institute of Health. Tell us where the senator stands on increased funding at both the National Institute of Mental Health and the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration.
Yeah, Senator Obama is absolutely for increasing funding for the NIMH, and you know he supports equal funding for Medicaid and Medicare, and he wants to set up a system whereby the system functions better than it functions now. Right now, you have First of all, you have all these inequities for mental health coverage, which is simply wrong and needs to be fixed. And then you have a situation where they're just administrative barriers for people getting Medicare and Medicaid, and they have to go through so many different procedures to get their coverage or to get their prescription drugs. And Senator Obama wants to fix that system so that it runs more efficiently, it runs more smoothly, and for that you need increased funding, you need expansion of resources, and Senator Obama's plans call for that increased funding and expansion of resources.
Does he support increased funding at the National Institute of Mental Health?
Yes, he does.
I'm going to ask you a question, Kareem. I'm going to ask, obviously, you and Renee are going to get a lot of similar questions, but this is one I'm going to ask both of you. Both candidates in their debates have been, and the vice presidential candidates, have been pressed to explain where they will cut funding in the wake of the economic crisis. And as far as I'm concerned, neither one have really answered clearly. Are his proposals for education and treatment at risk for being postponed?
Well, Dan, it's a good question. Certainly the country is at a kind of a critical point here with the economic crisis. And I'm certainly not an economic crisis expert. I'm the disabilities person at the campaign. But here's what I can tell you. Our plans stand as they are. The investments that Senator Obama is prepared to make for the mental health community and all of persons with disabilities, those commitments stand. We have not altered those commitments. We have not said that persons with disabilities are now going to be shortchanged because of the economic conditions. Those plans simply stand as they are, and the investments that need to be made are critical. I think we heard Senator Obama talk about things like health care and education. Those things need to continue to be funded fully, and that includes health care and education for persons with disabilities, where you're talking about IDEA, whether you're talking about pre-screening, or you're talking about investment in the Garrett Lee Smith Memorial Act. I mean,
it still doesn't say what would get cut back.
Well, Dan, that's a good question. And as I said, I certainly can't speak for the senator on what other things outside of disability may get cut. I think Senator Obama did answer that question in the last debate, but I can't speak to what else will be cut outside of disability. What I can tell you, though, is that there have been no decisions to cut anything related to persons with disabilities or mental health disabilities. And so I think that's what we need to focus on, is that our funding stands for persons with disabilities, and Senator Obama's commitments are firm, sound, and in place for our community.
Fair enough. And we've only got a few minutes left, and I want to switch gears with you. Both candidates have talked at length about the need to care for our returning veterans. In this war, in particular, PTSD is much, much higher than any other wars. Tell us about some specific initiatives the senator has committed to, if he wins.
It's a good question, Dan. And we have committed to several different things, or the senator has committed to several different things. And let me point out that we were, Jim is Dan, we were the only presidential candidate to answer the NAMI questionnaire in full. I don't believe Senator McCain has responded to that NAMI questionnaire, but Jim can talk about that. Number one, Senator Obama is going to fully fund the Veterans Administration Hospital, the VA, so that individuals who we recruit to go over and serve our country have the medical support that they need when they come back. That's number one. Number two, Senator Obama is going to set up a system whereby when we recruit individuals to serve in the military, when we deploy them, and when they return, we're going to improve mental health coverage, all points of that spectrum, so that we'll have mental health persons designed to investigate and look at mental health conditions when we recruit individuals to join the military. When they deploy, we'll have more mental health professionals on the ground to evaluate and provide care, treatment, and evaluation on the ground when they're deployed. When they return, We're going to have individual mental health professionals providing services, analysis, treatment, evaluation, and care when they return to help individuals with mental health conditions return and be productive members of society. So at every point of military service, Senator Obama is committed to increasing mental health coverage and treatment for individuals with mental health conditions.
Jim, I'd like to follow up with you about the questionnaire that you sent out to both McCain and Obama.
That's correct.
The Obama campaign did answer?
They did answer, and they answered every question.
What were the questions?
Well, the questions had to do with parity. The questions had to do with access to medications, which is an issue of concern. The question had to do with veterans. There were several questions in there. They were specific, and so it was very helpful to get positions on those. And they're available on the NAMI National website, and they're also available on the answers without comment are available on the Pennsylvania and the National website.
Before we thank Kareem and say goodbye to him, Jim, did you want to follow up?
Well, the problems with returning veterans and veterans who are currently here who are significant. Recent studies show 25% of all veterans returning had a diagnosable serious mental illness. And so it's going to be very important that this issue be addressed directly, and that there are some problems with the administration, as far as we can tell, of the VA and the way the funds are being handled. And those all have to be addressed if these veterans and their families are to receive the support that's essential for them to recover and to have fully functioning lives. I know we're short on time, but I would just like to raise the issue of the criminalization of the mentally ill as well. Lots and lots of people are now finding themselves in the criminal justice system. These people are in need of treatment as opposed to being incarcerated. The jails were never created for that purpose. Yet we find that the Los Angeles County Jail is now, by default, the largest treatment center in the country. And so it'd be really good if, Kareem, you had a minute to speak about the senator's plans to deal with that issue.
Absolutely. Happy to do that. Happy to do that, Jim. And I believe this is also answered in the NAMI questionnaire, but essentially, Senator Obama wants a smart crime policy. And, you know, it obviously is a travesty that individuals with mental illness or mental health conditions are not receiving the treatment that they need, whether or not they're part of the criminal justice system. And so that goes for juveniles as well. Individuals that have mental health conditions need to receive the treatment that they require, whether or not they're part of the criminal justice system. So individuals who are part of that system need to receive treatment so that we are properly caring for these individuals with mental health conditions. So Senator Obama is a full supporter of that.
Well, Kareem, I want to thank you so much for joining us and sharing this information with our listeners.
I was happy to be here, Dan and Jim. Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to November 4th.
Yeah. I'm sure we all do at this point. Kareem Dales, National Disability Vote Director for Obama for America. Well, now we're going to turn to Renee Amore. She's the Deputy Chairman of the Pennsylvania State Republican Party. She's the CEO of the Amore Group. By the way, our phone number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Renee, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
For joining us. Let's start where we did with Kareem, with the parity bill. McCain signed on to the parity bill as part of the economic stimulus plan. And as I said, it does not require all health insurance to cover mental health. Where does he stand on requiring mental health carriers to cover mental health.
He's very much in support of that, 100%. Let me be clear, because I'm a psychiatric nurse, this is very clear and dear to my heart. And because 6 months after I got married, my husband was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease, so I know what it is to live with somebody that's disabled and has some disabilities, but also understand the system as a psych nurse, and then also having family members with mental illness and drug and alcohol in my family. So this is very near and dear to my heart. But Senator McCain is very much in favor of making sure that everybody gets affordable health care, but not just that, the mental health and substance abuse coverage. It is ever so important for him to happen. A lot of times it gets lost in the shuffle. Mental health always has. I've been a psych nurse since 1974, and so people really don't always say that message clearly, in particular to candidates, and that's why I'm glad we're talking about it today. But he is in favor of that.
Is he willing? I want to make sure I understood what you said. Mm-hmm. Is he willing to require health carriers to cover mental health insurance if they don't now? To cover mental health if they don't now?
That is what he said. I've heard it in a conversation with him, and he's willing to do that. He wants that to happen.
Both candidates have not talked directly about what would cut back in the face of this financial crisis. In all fairness, I did recall, I believe, Senator McCain saying that one of the things he was going to look at very carefully is not just line item vetoes, but he was going to look at the Defense Department, that there was a lot of waste in that bill. But does he have an agenda when it comes to funding National Institute of Mental Health and the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration?
Let me go back to what Jim was saying as far as the NAMI ballot, you know, that you put out. The senator did not fill that out specifically, but did send a statement in. So I wanted to say that. And basically, what the senator wants to do is really look at not just defense, but other places. He's one big about earmarks and concerned about all the money we're spending on earmarks and looking at those type of things so that something like mental health, you know, substance abuse, all those things can be funded better by looking at the earmarks, things where we're wasting for whatever reason. You could bring that money in and help people with disabilities, help people with the mental health care that they really need.
I do want to come back to that questionnaire, Renee, that mm-hmm. the senator issued a policy statement to NAMI in response to that questionnaire, and I want to offer a quote that I'd like you to elaborate on. First, he describes mental health as a necessary complement to physical health, and, quote, the path to greater quality and lower costs is to recognize this fact and, where possible, provide incentives to treat physical and behavioral health together. He goes on to say that it makes sense from an economic view to treat the whole patient. Well, he seems to have a good vision of how mental and physical illness affect one another. Are you aware of any initiatives he has in order to make this happen?
One thing he wants to do, and I'm glad you picked that up, it's very important, is that he really wants to treat the whole person, not just here, there, you know, this problem here or whatever. So the second thing what he wants to do is really put in place preventative health care, and that's real important so that, you know, you start young, and we do early intervention, so we understand that.
What does that look like, preventative mental health care?
Well, it's really talking to the people at a younger age, you know, to make sure when they're in schools, there's testing that can be done to help if teachers are picking up things. But you have to educate the teacher. You really have to educate the teacher. And that's what Senator McCain is talking about, educating the folks that are dealing with children, you know, at a younger age, so that when they're getting 17 and 18, it's not last minute. I get so many patients or clients, you know, that are, you know, 17, 18 years old, that you're just picking up that they have a problem in the school system, and they're using it as a behavior problem instead of saying there's some type of mental health problem. So we're talking about preventative, teaching the teachers, you know, educating the teachers, giving them in services, and not just teachers. You talked about about judges. Judges have to be educated. They're not going to understand until, and you can hear my voice, I'm passionate about this. We cannot help them or anybody unless these folks are educated and understand what mental health is. The issue that, and what Senator McCain and I have talked about, and a lot of hysterics, is that people don't understand what mental health is in general, period. They understand it could be maybe somebody has a drinking problem. They may look at it like that. So basically, we're talking about education. That's what preventative is for us.
I want to follow up with what you just said, Renee. He position paper also stresses the role of personal responsibility. And I want to quote here again. I've stressed the central role of personal responsibility and leading to lower health care costs. He goes on to talk about fitness, better lifestyles, reduction in addictions of all types, and like you just said, Renee, teaching children the benefits of good lifestyles. All of these things make sense, Renee, but this business of personal responsibility can be a buzzword for blame.
Right.
And people with mental illness, I mean, that's a symptom of their mental illness. Mm-hmm. They can take responsibility. And we all know that people with mental illness have been blamed for their relapses.
All the time. Let me just say, with this personal responsibility, really looking at people around folks to help them to be more responsible, to work with them, again, educating them. Once the issue has happened, how can we help them to be personally responsible? How can we help them take care of themselves? Do we have to sign, like we do in employment, a coach to work with that particular person? Do we have to go on a one-to-one with that particular person? Do we need to put more funding in to do one-to-one care versus having everybody all group together and they don't even understand personal responsibility.
Jim?
Just on that needs to be worked out a little bit more, because is a statement that is of concern.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
People don't wake up. This is a disease. People don't wake up and say, I want to have a heart disease today, or I want to have a mental illness. This has nothing to do with personal responsibility. And so it's not clear whether that's really understood. Certainly as a psychiatric nurse, you understand
that.
But it doesn't come through clearly in that statement.
Not in the statement, and I agree.
That's something that needs clarification.
And we do worry that it could be a buzzword.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I want to talk about veterans. Here both candidates talked about the need for increased care for our veterans when they come back. In 2005, Renee, there was an amendment on a Senate bill to appropriate $500 million annually from 2006 to 2010 for counseling, mental health, rehabilitation services for veterans diagnosed with mental illness and PTSD. McCain apparently voted against that bill. Do you know what his thinking was and what his position is now?
Well, you know, I think his position is changing. Let me go back to when it happened. I think one is because people really were not clear in that bill as far as explaining what was going to happen. Again, Senator McCain's always seeing earmarks for this, that, and people not breaking it down. And I think it goes back to us having to educate Congress, legislators in particular, or not educate. I deal with them 24/7 around health care, mental health. And I think it goes back to him needing to be more educated. And that's why we definitely talked about this, because we took issue to it. Our company, because our small business deals with people with disabilities. And when you don't help us fund that, that's an issue for me. And so basically it was an issue for him saying he really did not understand. And my question to him is, do you understand now?
Let's see if we can get a phone call on before we have to go to break. We've got Maggie on the line. Maggie, hi.
Hi. I'm a vet. I'm retired, actually. So I'm a Cold War vet. And I have a number of medications that I have to get through my employer instead of through the VA, because the VA will not provide them. And it's getting very expensive to do this. And it's really hard. Is someone going to address the fact that you've got a lot of veterans out there who are retired that need medicines that they can't get through the VA?
Well, thanks for your call, Maggie. And I'll turn to Renee. And let's talk about the big picture with the VA. Does McCain have provisions for increased funding for the VA so these veterans can get the services they need. They're clearly not getting them.
Right. Senator McCain, is, you know, he's a veteran. You know he was injured in the war. He understands and knows.
Can I follow that up?
Sure.
Of course we know he was injured and he lived through that torture. Do you know if he had PTSD and got treatment?
I can't say, you know, that I do on that. I never really had that conversation with him on that. But just seeing how he walks and his injuries, you know, I can't even imagine. But to going back to her question, it is real important, you know, that the veteran are getting what they need. And what Senator McCain is saying, that they're coming out homeless, they need medication, there has to be a better system in place. And so I have to really really tack on to what Kareem was saying, that McCain feels the same way as the senator as far as having some type of commission pulled together to really look at where they're hurting, where there's a void. There's definitely a void between this in the system. And so they want to make that system better. So I have to say that he is going to look at a commission also to pull these issues together. And it's going to be a long-term thing. It's not going to happen overnight, because this has taken so long to over a period of time where there has been a void where people are coming back, we're having more wars, you know, we're having an increase of veterans needing help. So they really have to get on this 24/7 and put something together so folks can get their needs met. But he's also looking at pulling a commission together.
I want to clarify something, Renee, back to this this amendment that he voted against, mm-hmm. what was it, 3 years ago. If I understood you correctly, you said that he voted against it for lack of understanding, and he understands better now. Could you tell us what the gaps still are in his understanding? If you could sit down with him now, what would you like to educate him about that he might not understand?
Oh, definitely. I think that he has a better understanding, one, since he's been in leadership longer, two, because people have been talking to him, three, because he's been talking to the veterans himself, in particular about not getting the care that they need. He's visited several of the veterans' hospitals across the country, you know, and how he can help them, but not just them, their families, which is a big thing. And so he understands what some of the things that they're not getting as far as their physical therapy, the mental health, all those things, the medications. That's why he came up with he has to do something by putting a commission or something quickly together as soon as he gets into office.
Jim, same question of you. We're going to say goodbye to Renee in just a minute. Do you have any follow-ups for her?
Well, Renee, we've had good bipartisan support in Pennsylvania, and we're fortunate for that. We're still trying to get our hands around or handle on what the senator's policies are as it relates to veterans and as it relates to care. And so it's encouraging to hear that he has a deeper understanding of some of the needs of veterans and will set aside this commission. I would encourage all due speed. There are lots of families and veterans out there who are in need of service now. And as a caller indicated, she's not a returning vet. She's had this problem for a long time. And there's going to be a need for leadership and for direct action to correct some of the problems in both the Veterans Administration. And, you know, there's a lack of communication between the Department of Defense and the Veterans Administration.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What will the senator do to actually, you know, to actually make a difference?
It is definitely some challenges, Jim. And I think, first of all, you know, it has to be the leadership that's chosen in those particular departments. And the leadership has to have a full understanding of what the needs are so that they can communicate. I think it's been very turfy. You know, it's been allowed in previous administrations, so it's been going on, and nobody has really addressed it. And the senator will definitely address that particular piece and make sure that people do communicate.
All right, just quickly, and I don't mean to rush you, but I want to ask you the same question on the criminalization of the mentally ill. What are the senator's plans to deal with a growing problem where people who are placed in criminal justice system instead of getting treatment? What exactly are his thoughts and plans to deal with that situation?
One, people have to have a better understanding. I'm going back to education, and people understand that people need to be educated around these issues. Number two, putting more resources in the community. My thing is that we don't do enough locally. We tend to say, okay, it's in this place in the state. You have one or two facilities training, but you don't have the right professionals in there. So it's a need for more professionals, educated professionals, to make things get better so that people get the right help that they need.
But what we need to know is, would that be coming from the president and from the federal government, that leadership and that funding, or would that be something that would be turned over to each state and each county to try to figure out how to deal with?
What's going
to
happen, the money always comes from the federal government, then it will be sent out to the local and state government first, and then local governments. My feeling, strongly working as a mental health advocate, is that the money has to come from the federal government, because the states don't have it, or locally they don't. But then it will be sent out, and then people will be monitored on the state level to make sure that the local governments are doing what they need to do also.
Well, we are out of time. We've got to take a short break. We're going to come back and chat with Jim about what he's heard and what his thoughts are. Renee, I want to thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
For joining us. Renee Amore is deputy chairman of the Pennsylvania Republican State Party. She's also CEO of the Amore Group, and thanks again. Earlier on, we heard from Kareem Dale. He's the National Disability Vote Director for Obama for America. And like I said, when we come back, we're going to hear more from Jim Jordan, who's Executive Director of the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill in Pennsylvania. Our phone number is 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Penn Presents kicks off its theater season at the Annenberg Center with The Grand Inquisitor, Wednesday, October 15th through Sunday, October 19th. From Royal Shakespeare Company director Peter Brook comes this parable from Dostoevsky's The Brothers Karamazov, featuring Bruce Myers as narrator and inquisitor. For tickets at the Annenberg, 215-898-3900 or online at pennpresents.org. Penn Presents joins you in support of WHYY.
Next time on Day to Day.
Our top story. There are no top stories because every story is tops to us.
If people are talking about it, it's news to him.
Amazing. Shocking. Who knew?
Brian Unger brings it to you first.
We have this late breaking news. The news is not broken, nor is it late.
It's the Unger Report.
Are you in or what?
Mondays on Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Well, we're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. I'm sitting here now with Jim Jordan, who's Executive Director of NAMI, National Alliance of Mental Ill for the state of Pennsylvania. Well, we have heard, Jim, from Renee Amore, who's Deputy Chairman of the Pennsylvania Republican Party, and Kareem Dale, National Disability Vote Director, Obama for America. I'm going to ask you a tough question. Compare and contrast for me. What did we hear? What did we not hear?
That is a tough question, but
I always got asked those questions in school and didn't know how to answer. So,
I have to remind the listeners that we're not a partisan organization. We're a 501c3, so we don't endorse either candidate. We have clearly more specific answers from the Obama campaign. We had a questionnaire that went from our national organization that has 22 specific questions. Senator McCain did provide a statement, but the statement doesn't have specifics. And as I mentioned, and Dan, as you mentioned, the one area where he talks about responsibility, that's a concern. Now, I'm encouraged to hear that he has people like Renee who actually have hands-on experience, who are engaged in providing some information. But we still need to know what the candidate himself has to say on these issues. The questionnaire is pretty straightforward. There are issues outside of the questionnaire. We didn't get a chance to talk about co-occurring disorder. We didn't really get to delve into the criminalization issue very much. But there are a whole host of things we'd like the candidates to speak on to the American public.
Well, speaking of the criminalization, we've got a caller who wants to follow up on that. We have Liz on the line. Liz, are you there?
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi, Liz. Actually, what I wanted to talk about really is just the whole disconnect between the legal system and what's going on, you know, in the mental health field. I mean, you see it in criminal justice, you see it in disability law, you even see it in workers' comp. I mean, in Pennsylvania, the the standard for showing a work-related mental injury is much, much higher than showing a physical injury. And the legal system just has a lot of room, you know, a long, long way to catch up to what's going out there in the mental health field. And a part of it is just because in the legal system there's a evidentiary requirement for objective proof. And there's also a lot of light years behind in the understanding of mental illness, and that's evidenced as I believe Dr. Dan pointed out by the Supreme Court's decisions in the disability arena. And
I want to hear Jim comment on that. We've only got a minute or two left, so I'm gonna have to thank you, Liz, and ask for Jim's reaction. How do we bridge that gap? How do we deal with stigma? How does a president help a nation deal with stigma when it comes to mental health?
Stigma is very complicated. As you know, stigma, myths, beliefs have been carried through the centuries, actually, as it relates to people with mental illness.
Right.
That isn't overcome in one administration. But what it takes is a president who has an understanding and a commitment to represent all people and to treat people with fairness, and to understand that recovery is possible. If you have a president with those principles, that is his core, then that principle can provide leadership, can set in motion policies, commissions who study the various problems that are facing the system. President Bush did a wonderful job appointing that commission. Problem is, nothing was done with the report. All right, there's a lot of information out there that we have to take and implement. And so that leadership has to come from the top. And with that will come a reduction in the amount of stigma, a reduction in fear, a public dialogue, and concrete actions that can make a difference.
Well, I'd also like to see a president, frankly, who's got the courage and clarity to look inside and understand that there is a very fine line with all of us between diagnosed and undiagnosed mental illness, that the majority of us have woken up in the middle of the night and wondered and been afraid of our own minds and felt as though our emotions are out of control. That's a universal experience, and it's not a we-they phenomenon. It's us.
Dan, I'm full agreement. There are very few families in America that are not touched directly or indirectly by mental illness. This is such a huge problem, and a lot of it is undiagnosed.
And hopefully this huge problem will be addressed better by the next administration. Jim Jordan, I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us, Dan.
My guest has been in the studio, Jim Jordan. He's executive director in the National Alliance of Mental Illness here in Pennsylvania. Early on, we heard from Kareem Dale. He's the National Disability Vote Director for Obama for America. And recently, we heard from Renee Amour. She's deputy chairman of the Pennsylvania Republican State Party and CEO of the Amour Group. NAMI of Pennsylvania is holding its annual conference beginning October 29th through November 2nd at the Radisson Hotel in Harrisburg. I'll be speaking on When Families Face Mental Illness on Friday the 31st. Please come out and support this event. You can find more about it on my webpage at drdangottlieb.com. You can reach us here at voices@whyy.org. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Kevin Griffin. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is executive producer for radio content. Mike and Scott's the executive producer of Voices in the Family. This show is co-produced by Lisa Walters and Gita Simons. Thank you both so much. I'm Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friends.